Welcome and hello, everybody. This is the REI Society podcast, where we are informing you everything real estate and business related so that you can be successful in REI investing. We're sharing the tools, tips, and stories from people who have already made it. And my name is Brandon Thompson, your host. Each week, we'll bring extraordinary guests so that you can learn real estate from the best. Welcome, REI Society. This episode, we're going to be talking about financing, creative financing, all the ways you can assemble your deal and fund your transaction, no matter whether it's a flip, a wholesale, just so that. Like, we're going to come up with all kinds of cool ways. And this is going to be an exciting episode because a lot of people are racking their brains trying to figure out how to do some of this stuff. Well, we're going to tell you how to do it. All right. So there are no secrets and there are no systems that work all the time. So everything I tell you here cannot work every single time you attempt it, but just know that your first deal is not going to make you rich, but your first deal is going to make you rich, if that makes sense. All right. Starting out, you need to focus on creativity rather than cash. If you have cash, good for you. Now it's time to do more. Now it's time to do volume. Now it's time to leverage. But yeah, here's the thing. Wayne Gretzky said, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. So take that to the heart. If you don't go out there and do the work, you're not going to get the results and the benefits and the rewards. So here's the thing. Things to know. Wealth built through real estate investing is not easy money, but it is quick if you know how to make it work. Real estate is not free. It does require money. No money down actually means none of your freaking money down. The people that say no money down lie to you. This is the truth. They freaking lie to you. No money down basically means none of your money down. You have to flow the money creatively, if I said that right. Anyways, creative investing is about shifting the source of a needed cash. And I'm going to teach you that right here. All right. So let's talk about some strategies I've used, because that's the only way I know how to teach. Is I don't know what everybody else is teaching in all the different real estate shows out there, but I'm going to teach you the way I've learned and the way I've made money over the years and the way I'm still making money nowadays. Number one, this is going to sound like you're getting excited right now, and then I'm just going to give you the first one that's boring. Owner-occupied and traditional loans. Oh, shit. Did he just say that? Yes, he did. Owner-occupied with traditional loans. So as you know, if you don't know, now you do, out of the last 5 years, if you have stayed in two out of those last 5 years at this house, you can actually flip it for free and not pay taxes. And I want to say we'll give credit to maybe Bill Clinton for that. I think he passed that in the 90s maybe. But this is a quick way to get wealth. Go buy a home, first-time home buyer's assistance. Go buy a home. Put a small down payment up. FHA is 3.5%. If you're in USDA agricultural territory, it's 100%. You don't have to put down a down payment, and et cetera. So buy a home, let the equity, hopefully buy a home with equity or a small fixer-upper that you can kind of do some things over the next couple of years to it. And then you'll appreciate, you'll force the appreciation up, and then you'll also have natural appreciation, and then you'll have equity and you sell it and you don't have to pay taxes on it. It's a benefit that the government gives you. So utilize it. Owner-occupied houses is a good way to do this. And then there's on top of that, there's house hacking. Well, what is house hacking? Basically, you're buying a small multifamily, a 2-4 unit home. You're living in one, and you're renting out the other. So the other one, two, three units. And those renters are actually giving you money, proper cash flow that will allow you to pay your mortgage. And you basically are sitting there for free. If I was single, or if it was just myself and my wife starting out young, I would be doing house hacking all day long. You got to do it. Why wouldn't you? So, yeah, I know it doesn't sound sexy at first, but then when you explain it like that, every 2 years you can sell a property that you've lived in and pocket that money tax-free. So if you make $50,000 and in 3 years, you'll have $100,000 if you duplicated that. Or if you made $100,000 in 3 years and you duplicate it again, you'd have $200,000. And you see, it's a quick way to stack cash while you're doing other creative financing techniques, which I'm about to go into. All right. So that was one method. The next method is partnerships. Now, here's the thing. The greatest weakness that I see is a lack of cash, but you may be good at having knowledge. You may be creative. You may have more time and ability to do your own labor. You might know how to find a freaking good deal and the other person doesn't. So guess what? You find somebody that has capital at their disposal, but they don't have time to do anything that I just said. That's where you're going to pull a joint venture together. Well, guess what? That sounds good, Brandon, but I don't have anybody I know of. Well, I'm going to tell you how to get a partner. All right, there's a few different things you can do. Number one, you can build your personal brand. You're in the era of social media. If you're not building your dang personal brand, then shame on you. Your reputation, your knowledge, your experience is your personal brand. And if you don't have a good reputation, you don't have experience, then freaking soak up the knowledge. Listen to every episode of this REI Society podcast. Read books. I mean, take some of these training programs at reisocietyedu.com. Look, you can get the knowledge and then go practice it, and then you'll get the experience. And then you'll build up your reputation in the process. Heck, I mean, you can say a couple of smart quotes online and people will give you a thumbs up. So that's it. Your personal brand. Build your personal brand and recognize that every move you make, people are watching you while you're online. I mean, you don't know who all is watching you. So keep positive. Don't freaking push crap. Push positivity and build that reputation up. Number two, like I said, your knowledge. People talk a big game, but they don't really know what they're talking about. I'll say it again. People talk a big game, but they don't really know what they're talking about. I see so many people thinking that they know real estate online, but then you ask them a question, they don't even know how to do this or that. Like, I have a wholesaler trying to wholesale a property to me. They don't even know anything about how to flow a deal. They don't have the proper knowledge. And you can get that, like I said, through the REI Society. That's why I named it REI Society. Create a society of people who are contributing. We're creating more and we're contributing more. We're trying to help people up-level their game. So look, learn as much as you can and speak about your knowledge. Every time you get a new thought or a new process that works, put that out into the world, into the universe. Go to REI meetups. Sit downs with real estate investors. Read online forums. Read books. Listen to podcasts. Listen to everything that has to do with this industry, and that's going to make you knowledgeable. You'll be a knowledge broker, and then you can share that experience and all throughout the process, you're building that reputation. So there again, number one was the brand. Number two was the knowledge. Number three, experience. Again, your brand is strengthened through experience. So now you're seeing we're connecting the dot. The more you put out there, the more output and input is going to bring more people to you. Like, I got people dumping money on me and I don't even have enough deals for them right now because there's a shortage in real estate. And my God, I mean, somebody bring me a deal, maybe I'll throw you a 10% cut. I don't know. I'm not going to throw you a 50-50 because you don't have the knowledge and experience as me, but you see the point? I have a shortage of inventory. The person that can get out there and freaking figure out how to get the deal can partner up with me and I'll pull the deal together and give you a profit. So it's as simple as that. And then now you've done one, you've got experience. Then you can talk about that process on the social media, on Instagram and Facebook and whatever else. Talk about how it flowed. Teach people how to do what you just did through your social media. Now you have experience. You're building your personal brand. You have the knowledge. I think you're tying it all together. Okay, that sounds good, Brandon, but you still didn't teach me anything practical. You son of a bitch. Okay, well, let's talk about that. This is how you're going to pitch a partner. When you finally get this reputation built up with a little bit of knowledge and maybe some experience, this is how you're going to pitch a partner. You're going to give them the details, the analysis, the repair estimates, the color photos, and the comps of the property you brought together. I repeat, that's important. Details, all the details, an analysis, repair estimates, color photos, comparables, show them the after repair value, and put it all into a pretty little email. And I teach you how to do this in my wholesale program on REI Society EDU. But put it in an email, send it to them, and pitch them what you are seeking. You know, and if they see something professional or at least a clean breakdown that makes sense, they might be interested in talking to you. Number two, splits. How do you pitch a partner? Splits, like I said earlier, a 10% split. You know, I absorb the property, I go to the work, and I flowed my whole money. I did all the work, utilizing my own teams. You didn't really do anything but find a property. You made 10, but you're going to make 10%. Now, here's the thing. Splits, you want full equity. You know, in that example, is 10%. You could even get somebody that might even do 50-50 with you, but they're going to put the cash up. And if they put the cash up and all you did was bring a deal to the table, you know, don't pitch a fit. Just get what you get. Don't pitch a fit. You're going to do the work. If you do a lot of the work and the rehab and all the stuff, then maybe a 50-50 is fair. If all you did was bring a dang deal to the table, then 10% is fair, 15%. So it's according to the amount of labor you're willing to put into the deal from start to finish, and that's what your equity is worth. So pitch that split. What are you pitching? Are you pitching, you know, the rehab? You found the deal. You're going to do the rehab. You just need somebody to put up the money and the flow of the transaction for you. And if that's the case, then yeah, that's it. You might be able to get a more equitable position. But if you do nothing else but just buy a property and put it online, and somebody comes along and says they'll do the deal, then 10%, that's fair. All right, so down payment. There's another way to pitch a partner. If you can flow this really well, you can get an investor to fund the down payment on a deal. Let's say you got good credit, or you can get the hard money loan, but you need like 10% down or 5% down, and you just don't have the cash. You got the credit, but you don't have the cash. Well, come, Brandon. Hey, I live here. You live there. I need like $10,000 put in this deal. Brandon might be interested. So you get it. Investors fund the down payment. You get the loan. You resell the home. The investor gets their down payment money back plus 20 to 30%. Like, shit, really, Brandon? That's 20 to 30% just for a small down payment? Well, guess what? It's an unsecured loan. Most of the time, the hard money lender will not allow them to take back a second position. So they're gambling on you. Get it? Got it. All right. Number four, private lending partnerships. This is where you do know somebody that's wealthy. You do know somebody that's in your network, and they're starting to see that you've built that reputation and that personal brand and your knowledge, and they actually believe in you. So they're going to give you money, and you can get private capital from them. Let's just say 10% and 2 points, or maybe it's just a straight up 10%, or maybe it's 15%. I don't know, but that's it. You can actually get a loan that way and or an equity position with them. And that's really cool. You can pitch that to a partner, a credit investor, somebody that has the ability to get a loan. If you have bad credit, you can come up with a down payment because you have a little bit of cash, but they got a good credit. You would use a hard money lender, but this might be a good deal if Daddy Warbucks down the street can actually just do the deal. I mean, have them get that loan for you. You know, the hard money investor is not going to believe in you, or the traditional investor is not going to believe in you, but they do believe in them because they got an 800 freaking credit score. But guess what? They want to see you have some skin in the game, so you're willing to put the $5,000 to $10,000 down. Okay, that's a great deal. 50% of a great deal is better than 100% of no deal. I mean, come on, man. All right. So that's some things I see that you can actually accomplish with the different ways to pitch a partner and so on. So let's get back on to the strategies I used. I know that was a lot of context for the second strategy. And just to remind you, the first one was owner-occupied, utilizing traditional loans. The second one was partnerships. And we haven't even moved on. We've been talking about partnerships for a few minutes. The third is HELOCs, a home equity line of credit. If you already own a home, your personal residence, and you owe less than what it's worth, you have a cheap source of financing at your disposal. HELOCs are extremely cheap right now, and they'll probably remain to be cheap for several years to come. Build up that equity and get a line of credit so that you can use when you find a good deal. Think of it like a credit card. You can borrow it, pay it back anytime you want, make a minimum payment or a full payment. Just use it like a credit card. It's really good, but you got to be safe. You know, you got to have equity, but you got to be safe because it's your house that's tied to it, obviously. I don't have to say anything more than that. It's common sense. So as you know, this can be a source for down payment or a hard money loan according to the equity you have. If you've got $200,000 in equity, obviously you might be able to find a good cheap home in a really nice area, in a really good starter area. If you have little equity, then, you know, let's just say $50,000, then you might have the down payment and you can go pair that with a hard money loan. So that's great. So talking about hard money, let's talk about hard money. Number four, hard money. Hard money is financing obtained from private individuals or businesses, institutional hard money lenders, for the purpose of real estate investments. And if you've never done a hard money loan, you may be wondering what all entails with a hard money loan. What does all entail with that hard money loan? Well, guess what? It's based on the strength of the deal. The more equity you have, the better financing options you're going to get. They're usually more short-term. 6 to 12 months is typical. And they're a little bit higher in interest. 8 to 15% is pretty typical. Then on top of that, you have points. You have a high number of points. I've seen somebody get raped with four. Sorry. Pardon my language here today. I'm cussing and I'm saying crazy stuff. But I've seen people be raped with 4 points. You know, I would never pay more than 2, possibly 3. I mean, 3 if you're starting out. 4 points is crazy. If you don't understand what a point is, then a point is basically 1% of a of a loan amount. I'm sorry, 1% of a loan amount. So 1% of $100,000 is one point of $100,000 is $1,000. 2 points is $2,000. 4 points is $4,000. So you see, it can build up quick. The higher number of points, the more equity it's going to take away from your deal. All right. Usually you don't have to have income verification. Like I said, it's based on the strength of your deal. So people with low income can usually go flip a house. It's not really based on that. Sometimes they don't even look at your credit, which is cool if you have crappy credit. Another good thing about hard money lending is it's fast. I've closed deals same day with a hard money private lender of mine. And, you know, even the better than that, the property condition is not important. You can have the beater upper and finance it. Whereas you go get a traditional loan is not going to give you financing options. So obviously you're there to rehab the property, to flip it, to keep it for rental or whatever. And that's why the property condition doesn't matter. All right. So let's talk about hard money lending. What are you looking for in hard money lending? You're probably going to look for a flip or a rental. And if you're doing a rental, you're going to use that hard money lender, you know, as a bridge loan in between the purchase to the refinance of a new loan. So usually you need about 6 months seasoning. You can do rate term, which basically means you're in and out for the same loan amount you financed. But if you want to get a little bit of money out because you bought a good deal and it has equity, you're probably going to have to wait about 6 months. Every once in a while, you can do 100% financing. All they care about is security. Your hard money lender is going to want to see some kind of security intact. Another thing to think about with hard money is your draws. You know, when you're doing hard money, you want to make sure that you have some capital at your disposal. If you're flipping a home, they're going to need money in the bank, you're going to need money in the bank because you're going to probably have to advance a lot of these renovations and then call the lender back, give them a list and a breakdown, maybe even receipts and photos of the work that's been done. And then they'll send you a wire back with a partial draw. And you might need to carry 1 to 3 draws. 3 is typical with most hard money lenders. And then, you know, most lenders want to see some skin in the game. They want to know that the borrower has something of monetary value to lose. So what's typical, I mean, like I said, sometimes you'll get 100% with a close friend, but a hard money lender typically is wanting 10% down. So if it's $100,000 that you're buying a home for, you need to put 50 grand in it, and you're going to be in it for $150,000 and it's worth $200,000. You'll have $50,000 in equity there. That purchase price, you're going to have to put 10% down. So on $100,000, you put 10 grand down, and then they'll typically give you the full renovation amount of that $50,000, maybe in 3 draws as you're working with your contractors. All right. So that's hard money lenders. Number 5, private capital. We kind of touched down on this, but your family, your friends, people that you're close to that may have excess capital. They may be busy professionals. Maybe your dentist, your chiropractor, friends you travel with. Maybe they got a lot of capital at their disposal. They're busy professionals and they don't have time to invest it. And this can make them a small yielded return. You know, that would be really good for them to make an extra 10, 15, 20%. This is how I built my business over the years. I'm slowly phasing lenders out because I've got more cash nowadays, but it's, you know, I built my business on these kind of principles, private capital, hard money lender, owner occupied homes, and so on. So guys, this is so much easier than you think it is. All right. When you're looking, when you're dealing with private capital, you can also do networking. Networking should be a lifestyle. If you don't have anybody in your immediate circle, your 10 feet, let's call it, your family and friends, then networking should be your lifestyle. And you need to advertise. You need to be a mobile billboard for yourself on social media, you know, these REI groups, a lot of them are on Facebook. Remember that you're not a salesman asking for money. You're a business person holding an opportunity. And if you don't act like that, they're going to sense the fear. You also need to have an investment deck ready, the information packet. You know, you're going to give them an information packet. And actually, if you guys text me in the show notes, I will go ahead and send you my information packet. I will give you my investor deck per se. That is going to be something really, really cool for you. That is going to be awesome that you can actually rip off and put your own information on there and pitch that out to private capital investors. I'd be more than happy to text you that or email that back to you. So text me in the phone number in my podcast notes, and I will give you the information that you desire there. And you, it'll go a long way. I promise you. I promise you. I'm going to give that to you for free. All right. And look, you can treat each deal separately per investor as an individual transaction. Just because you just did one deal with one investor doesn't mean you can't go find others. So, I mean, this is crazy, right? I mean, you can do multiple deals if you can find multiple people. You don't have to settle down with just one. This is how I built my business. I built it up with 40 investors. We were flipping 150 homes a year. I had 100 rental properties that I owned 50-50 with investors. Let that sink in. 100 homes that I had 50-50 with investors. And we were flipping 150 homes a year with investors on top of that. So yeah, it's good. You can pull money into a fund and fractionalize it. It's like a blind pool. You can find enough people who don't have $200,000, but they could put $25,000 or $50,000 on a piece, do that blind pool, talk to an attorney. Probably going to want a JV agreement, a note, promissory note, security deed, insurance made out, and all that stuff. And heck, you're going to want that anyways with your different hard money lenders and private capital investors. And that's going to set them up in a secure, they're going to feel secure and at ease that they're not being taken. And you want them to rest at night with their, you know, pillow tight, sleeping well, and know that you're taking care of them with their money. Next thing, 6 lease options. Oh man, lease options. Well, basically you're doing a rent to own, not a lease purchase. These are a legally bound contract. You have an option contract that is legally bound, and you can put down an option consideration. Let's just say that's $5,000. The person that has the house lets you take over, and in an end duration of time, you can walk away or you can adhere to the option. So you can exercise your option or walk away from the option. So kind of this is kind of the flow of how it works. Investor signs a lease option for the longest term and lowest rents possible or payment. And the investor would sublet the property to a tenant for the highest possible rent while keeping the cash flow difference. Done a number of these. They're so freaking good. Here's the thing. You always need to let the owner know what you're doing. If you're doing this for rental, you're telling them that you're going to sell it. Don't lie. Or if you're doing this for the opposite direction, don't lie. Tell them what your intentions are so that they are in the know, because guess what? They still own the home. Technically, you just have a legally binding contract that says you had an option. So thank you. All right. Here's the thing. You need to realize that your job is to solve people's problems. When you're dealing with these lease options, you need to make sure that you're there to help and serve. So walk through this and let them know that you're here to help. And that'll give you the best deal you can get for lease options. All right, number 7, subject twos. Subject twos are really cool. You basically arrange to pay the owner's mortgage for them, and they give you title to the property immediately. You get the mortgage statement, they give you title, you're the new owner. That's subject to their mortgage payoff you know, whenever you decide to pay it off, whenever you decide to sell, whether it's now or later. And you're going to pay that money each month directly to the mortgage or the bank. And the reason why you won't control over it is because there's been a lot of instances in the past where the owners just pocket your cash and they never pay a payment and they walk off. You know, you gave them a down payment, a sizable down payment, and you paid 18 months worth of payments. And then they decided to just leave. And then next thing you know, the sheriff's knocking on the door and kicking you to the curb. Well, you don't want that to happen. So you won't control the mortgage and make sure that it's being paid. And then you can also show them a copy of the receipt so that they feel good for themselves. All right. 8, seller financing. Look, seller financing is not that bad. I mean, a lot of people are scared to talk to sellers about financing. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, it's an easy way to finance, and you can possibly negotiate a low or no down payment. It's creativity at its best, and it's great for unfinanceable properties such as trailers or commercial properties where you have to have huge down payments, or maybe it just has too much work and people won't finance it, period. It might even scares your hard money lender. So if the seller's willing to give you a good deal, why not? And you know, the best part of it is it doesn't show up on credit reports. I love that fact because you can own a number of properties with seller financing and it doesn't affect you whatsoever. And that's the best part. Okay, so now you got to ask yourself, if you're doing seller financing, how is this good for the seller? Obviously, they're giving you a property with low or no down payment and you're taking over a project and they're like, why am I doing this? Well, it's monthly income for the older. For the older people, they have monthly income that allows them to sustain their lifestyle. It's a better ROI. Traditional mortgage rates might be 3.5%, but maybe they can get 8%. It gets them to spread out taxes. I am working on a package right now of 20 homes, and the seller is older, and he's really scared. He loves the income, but that's not really what's scaring him. He wants to sell these properties and get out of them, but the problem is, He's nervous about the taxes when he has to recapture all that depreciation from all of these properties all over those years. So this allows him to spread out taxes by doing owner financing and slowly paying down the principal because he owns these all free and clear, but it allows me to slowly pay down the principal and he can just take that money in the form of income and pay at a lower tax bracket versus capital gains or et cetera, et cetera. So that's pretty cool. And like I said earlier, maybe they just can't sell otherwise. It's an unfinanceable property because it's a piece of junk. That could be the case, and you might be their savior in a sense. So that is it. That is it. Those are some different ways that I utilize for creative financing. I really hope this helps. And if it does, or it opened your mind some, give me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Go ahead, take a screenshot and send it to me on Instagram, and then go to reisocietyedu.com for my training programs. See you in the next episode.